I am unashamed. What about you?
So welcome back, Unashamed. We still got Zach in house as predicted.
Yep,
and which is
prophecy,
great.
The prophecy was true.
The prophecy was fulfilled right here. Zach in house. We're going to just dive right in because we really got into Mark 12 in the last chapter, and we started out with this parable that Jesus gives, and it's a thinly veiled parable because the people who he was talking about got it. The crowd got it, and of course, what he's doing is, as Jay said, is he's picking his fight now because he's out there.
So we did say this in overtime that in Mark 11:27 he identifies the people who are trying to trap him and argue with him because he is a threat to their religious establishment, which he established. And now he's trying to fulfill that and making it, you know, through prophecy and all the things that the Son of God is here. The kingdom has come. I'm the king. And he's now gone public.
And these people, Jace, they've been on the fringe through the whole time, these 3 years he's been doing all this. I think that's why Mark lays his out geographically. You know, he was up here, he was over there, he was in the Decapolis. Now he's come in what they think is their house, but what Jesus knows, no, this is my house. Yeah. And so there's the clash. You know, there's the clash because he's in the heart of Jerusalem at the temple.
Which is the nature of, like, how corruption works, right? You have an institution that people start with good intentions, and it blows up and does well. And then it gets bigger and more powerful, whatever. And then people come in and co-opt that, and kind of like the parasites, they suck off of it. And they're sitting here in Jesus's temple. It's his temple, and they think that this is somehow their temple.
That's right,
because they've been running the show for the last however many years.
Right,
and this guy shows up, and he's flipping over tables, and he's doing all, and they're like, whose authority? Wait, who
do you think you are?
Who do you think you are coming here doing this?
And they can't just kill him outright because the crowd
at this point is with him.
Because they have said he's doing miracles.
That's right.
Which confirmed, they're like, this is not a magic trick.
Right.
This guy was dead.
And
Lazarus was dead, and now he's alive. Well, you know, if you were part of that, I made that illustration last time. I mean, you're jumping up and down, ready to really die in that moment because you're like, evidently he can bring back.
We read that in the last podcast from John 11, the arrogance. Yeah. They saw it and they said, what are we going to do about this guy? I mean, people are believing. If we keep this going, everybody's going to believe this guy.
But he's a storyteller. So he gives them this parable about the vineyard. And I love what was the when you read the version of this where the people spoke back, was that?
It was in Matthew.
Matthew.
Yeah, 21.
And the people speak back.
These wretched wretches.
So you can
imagine. What the irony of that was, him telling this, where, and the meaning of it was that God sent the prophets to him, and he's trying to share with them, like we've said many times, Jesus has come. I'm coming to the earth.
Yeah.
I'm in the form of a man. I mean, that's what he was trying to get them to see. And they killed the prophets. They didn't put their faith and trust in Jesus. And the irony of all this is, speaking of vineyard, and they would kill his son. I mean, he's telling them what's fixed to happen. And we pointed out that three different times he predicted his death, but he actually predicted it here in this parable, which would be a fourth one.
Right.
But the irony that hit me was that later on, Paul would record that Jesus Christ was the first fruits from among the dead. So he tells this parable about the vineyard, and he sends his son and they kill him. And even that would be used as a picture of Jesus being the first fruits, which implies this is going to happen again.
That's what's
others
interesting.
Will follow.
You're right. He tells the story and it hadn't even happened yet.
That hadn't happened yet. So you can imagine
their mind bender.
So you can imagine their frustration. All right. You're on the opposite end of Jesus. Just think about it. You've been running the show. It's your structure, your temple, your protocols, your network. This is your building. And this guy shows up and doesn't answer a question. You can't trap him. Every time you think you're going to trap him, he comes in with a whole nother thing that blows everybody's mind. The people are getting behind him. I mean, you can imagine if your heart's not right, how angry. I mean, they were seething with rage at this man and Jesus, who is, I mean, but
instead of seeing it as conviction, they saw it as threatening, because we've been talking about that in the power. You know, it reminds me of, like, you know, some, all of us speak in front of crowds, and sometimes you're just into it, man, the Holy Spirit, the study, it's all coming out, and you got people talking back, come on, bring it. Yeah. And you're more, and then there's one guy sitting there that's just stone cold, he's not buying it. Yeah. And that's the one, you know, you look at him, and afterwards he's like, I got a problem with you, preacher. And that's because the message was convicting, but the heart wasn't right. And so, you know, this is kind of what it reminds me of in this scenario.
So if you're following along, Mark does this many times. He tells a story within a story. In this case, he's going to bring up two arguments politically and I guess about the afterlife, because you have three new groups of people who are going to enter the argument stage, which
I think, I mean,
they're
the
not
point.
New,
yeah.
But they're the Pharisees and the Herodians in chapter 12 and 13. So we're going to talk about paying taxes, which is a highly controversial paragraph we'll get into. And then in 18, the Sadducees come along who say there's no resurrection, and they have a question to try to trap Jesus in one, keeping the marriage law, this marriage and divorce, and what happens if your spouse dies, and what happens if you're married seven times at the resurrection. Well, who's going to be the husband and the wife? I mean, you've created a system that won't work, from their opinion. But then when he gets to 28, we're back to the teachers of the law, because one of the teachers of the law heard these arguments, and now we have another question, which leads to another issue in the temple courts in verse 35. We're back with the religious leaders. And then I love 41 when it gets to the end, because it gets to what Jesus is all about in the new kingdom, that these participants in the kingdom, they may look poor, they may be poor in spirit, they may be weeping, they may not have anything, but they're the most powerful people on the planet because of his power, his success, you know, his glory, and his virtue. So,
And we had talked about, Judge, just to reiterate this because we're fixing to read it, that the Herodians popped up back in Mark 3, you know, making sort of these alliances. And you got to remember, this is all part of the political picture, because you still have Herod, and you've got this Jewish, but they're puppets, you know, they're not even
puppets of the Roman Empire.
Exactly.
These aren't real. Yeah, this is, but it is political. I mean, you have to recognize what's going on here. And I would argue that even the Pharisees and Sadducees were political groups. I mean, yes, they were, you know, part of the Jewish culture and part of the temple and all that. But this is, there's a lot of jockeying for power going on here.
Right. And so these alliances are made. So Pharisees and Herodians, who don't get along about anything, but in their hatred for Jesus, it brought them together. Same thing's going to happen later, the Bible tells us, with Herod himself and Pontius Pilate. They've never gotten along, but in this scene about what to do with Jesus, they wind up becoming pals, you know, going forward. So it's exactly. It's kind of like the evil alliance.
And I will say this. Now, this may be deep, but he is laying the groundwork for introducing a phrase that we've come to maybe take for granted a little bit, but I would call it understanding what a living hope is. Because Jesus, it's going to look like he gets crushed. Everybody abandons him. He had nothing. We put down the insurrection. This crazy radical thinks he's something and can do all these magic tricks. Well, now what are you going to do? We're going to crucify you like the, you know, whatever adjective you want to put in there that you are. And you're now what are you going to do? And, you know, they're mocking him and they're scourging
him. He saved others, but he can't save himself.
And then all of a sudden, he comes back from the dead. And so what that does, all these times that he's telling us to deny ourselves and bring, you want to follow me? Carry your cross. Give up everything you have. Go sell everything you have. All, this, which seems to be a miserable calling to give up all worldly success and endure pain and learn from it and go through your wilderness. But he's introducing a concept of living hope. Because what you think about your future, and this has been proven, whether you're a believer or not, affects how you live.
Right.
You will endure whatever. If you know at the end of the road, you're coming out of the ground. I mean, there's been numerous movies and different things where, you know, two guys were in prison. You know, one of them, his family died while he was in prison. Well, he was dead a year later. The other one had his wife and his kids waiting on him, and he just endured. And he do it because that love for maybe seeing them one day affected how he lived and his attitude. So I think we take that for granted because he's laying the groundwork for that so that later on, 2,000 years later, it may look really rough, your life, and you may lose your job, and you may lose your marriage spouse. You know, I mean, all these things happen, but you know in your mind when you look at the story of Jesus that ultimate victory came through him laying down his life and being resurrected. It produced a concept that was foreign to the world, which is a living hope on earth.
I think that's the power of the passion of Christ. And, you know, Mel Gibson did that film a few years back. By the way, there's the sequel's coming out.
I've heard that the resurrection. They were working on it, yeah.
So that's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
But, you know, you think about, like, when you watch that movie, The Passion, and, yeah, we try to watch it every Easter, and it's like when this—it's not an enjoyable experience, right? I mean, it's not like, I have to like gear myself up to watch it because of the brutality of it. And so, you know, I think about like my own life, and I think about how Jesus handles this question on taxes, for example. And it's like, you know, we get so bent out of shape of how we're disenfranchised here on this. Maybe it's a religious liberties argument, maybe it's a political, whatever the thing is that you're like bent out of shape about, and then you see the Son of God having his flesh ripped off of his back and just beat to a living pulp, and you're just like, it could be worse. It was worse, you know? And to me, it's in that, like it's in this death, in the way that he died, in this, the humility of it all, in the, and when I say the humility, I don't mean like the humility. I mean, it was humiliating. You know what I mean? It was a complete mockery. I mean, they're talking about, and you see that it was that in that was the seeds being sown of a life that was coming forth from the grave that would literally change the entire history of the universe.
Yeah. Every time I read this text, Zach, or watch The Passion, I mean, I come away with extreme gratitude because I view that this event of the Passion as for me. And, you know, when they're down there sopping up his blood with, you know, with rags and towels, I mean, in the moment of watching that, I'm thinking, yeah, all that was for me.
Well, that's what separates what Jesus did from all other religious so-called people. I mean, at some point you realize that his blood, it goes down through all the politics and through all the bureaucracies, and it finds you. You know, and that's why he tells the story about you lose one. You got 100 sheep, you lose one. Well, he's going to go get it. That's why I'm eating with this riffraff. He actually was the only power on earth that just looked at all people equally, no matter where they were from, what they did, and all these. And we brought this up last podcast, these powers that be that are attacking him, they tended to cater to the people that agreed with them. And since Jesus obviously didn't agree, that's why this is sickening, where the teachers of the law and the chief priests and the powers that be, they were not really, didn't have political prowess. So what do? They're the ones that sent, in verse 13, later, these teachers of the law, because Jesus just gave them a scathing parable.
Before we read that, let's take a break. So we're coming up on the holidays. It's the happiest season, and sometimes the most hectic season. We want to get that family recipe just right. Maybe we want to deal with that uncle whose politics are just wrong. So, you know, we're trying to figure out a good gift to give. In the spirit of giving, we have a great idea. Premium Auto Products from Raycon, one of our favorite sponsors. They have wireless earbuds, headphones, speakers. They offer premium sound, a custom comfortable fit,
up to 54 hours of battery life, which you need that. So whether you're going to, you know, fire up the living room for the party, or if you need just to get away for a little Zen meditation with the earbuds, this is the product for you. I love them. And I've told you before, my favorite place to use my Raycons is on a plane somewhere, reading my book, just kind of getting into my own world. So Raycon wants you to make this stressful holiday period easier with holiday gift guides for everyone in your life. And starting this December, they're going to have the countdown to Christmas, and they're going to have some pop-up flash deals every single day so you can find some great products. You can get them at Kohl's or Walmart, but the best deals you're going to find are at buyraycon.com/unashamed. They offer free shipping, free returns, buy now, pay later options with a 30-day happiness guarantee, and we like that. So right now, go to buyraycon.com/unashamed. to get 15% off site-wide with the code HOLIDAY, plus free shipping. So that's the code HOLIDAY at buyraycon.com/unashamed for 15% off your Raycon purchase. That's buyraycon.com/unashamed.
To your point, now there's four of us sitting here, and we all know each other well, kin folks. I've been at this for about 50 years, and what stands out to me, and I see it here in all of this and all these arguments these people were making so they wouldn't follow Jesus. You present Jesus to people, and it's not rocket science, you know. He died, was buried, and raised from the dead. But the same, I noticed there's something that always flows within the people that have not moved at all. For whatever reason, you end up, you're telling them about Jesus. And that thing is what's available is classically seen in every one of them is misery. It's misery. It's just stark misery. You're trying to get them to turn off and get up and curse, you know, and just when you're pointing them to Jesus, you'd think that. But misery's there, and by the same observation, I've seen you boys here, y'all now in your 50s, going towards 60, whatever, but there's one thing I never see in any of you, misery. I don't see, you're not miserable. Miserable people, they're there by the billions, surrounding, going everywhere. It's just stark misery.
And to your point, it's not necessarily
it's amazing to watch.
People who just don't have, even people who are wealthy, who have possessions, yeah, see a lot of misery.
A lot of misery.
Because you think those things will supply you what you want.
It's an ethos of bitterness that just permeates. Yeah,
it is.
It's so
and true. He's basically talking to these people.
That's what he's talking
about. It's going to all end up. They are going to suffer misery. But
well, these religious leaders who are miserable should have been embracing Jesus. Is like they should be, you know, having palm branches and saying, yeah, here we go. You know, this
their they should have joined the Hosanna. Their doubt is just a sign and showing of misery.
Yeah. So watch this. Let me read this. So later, verse 13 to 12, they sent some of the Pharisees and Herodians to Jesus because they have the political power to do something about this guy.
Yep. Yeah, we're going up the scale.
Oh, it's a coup. And to catch him in his words, and this is, look, it's hard to read stuff like this, because watch what they say. They came to him and said, "Teacher, we know you are a man of integrity."
Yeah. So political.
Watch out.
Political is this.
Watch out when people are flattering you.
That's right.
Yeah.
It gets worse. You aren't swayed by men because you pay no attention to who they are. Which is, I just made that point.
Right.
He treated everyone from the peasant, even in his parable. You think about the servants he was sending, the prophets. What were they? They were humble people. They were shepherds. They were fig gatherers. They were the prophets of old. They were just normal people that he chose, and because of their character and their surrender towards him. So look, then he says, let's see, where am I at? You aren't swayed by men because you pay no attention to who they are, but you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. Incredible.
Everything they said is right, but they're totally lying.
So I thought the next question should be, can we follow you?
That's right.
But instead, you get this question. Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Should we pay or shouldn't we pay?
So, yeah, this is.
And then they sit back and go, now deal with that.
What this is like, we don't like the Roman Empire.
Right.
These people do not like the Roman Empire.
Correct.
But so what they're trying to do is now they're going to try to shift this burden over to the Romans. Because if he says, you don't have to pay Caesar.
Now, the other translations, they say imperial tax, and I looked it up, and it was basically the worst tax they have, which is just you pay to be part of the Roman.
Yeah.
Alive citizen. On planet Earth.
It was a census tax.
Yeah.
If you say, I'm here, then you got to pay.
Yeah. And basically, they're paying Rome to oversee you. It was like a mafia situation.
And look, and
you need protection, so pay us.
So you read the history, you go back and have a fascinating read. Like 25 years before this, there was a leader who revolted and said, I ain't doing it. I'm not paying this. It's just ridiculous.
They had a tea party.
Yeah, it led to an insurrection. And guess what? They revolted and died. So,
because the Romans are saying, pay us taxes so we'll protect you. Who from whom? Us.
But everybody was aware of that. So basically, you have this trap to the question. If Jesus says, pay the tax, well, then the people revolt. Well, I thought you were going to bring a new, what are you saying? You're for this? And I mean, and this Caesar.
What kind of king are you?
Pedophile, an adulterer. I mean, you know, everything the Lord is for, he's against, and vice versa. So, and if you don't pay the tax, well, then the authorities, we're back to insurrection.
Right.
You're creating insurrection.
He needs to be killed.
They got him.
Yeah, it's a trap. They got him. There's no way out of this.
If it, of course, the Lord answers the best way, but if it had been me, I would have answered like Fletcher did on Josie Wales. Senator, don't pee down my back and tell me it's right.
Guess what? This is as controversial today as it was anyway, because now you're getting into a political argument, which is this, verse 10. And it's a yes or no question, which in any media coverage of any political event, how many times did the media or any kind of Congress, they're seated and they're asking the question, they'll say, please answer with a yes or no.
Yeah.
It's never going to happen. They're never going to say.
That's right.
They start talking, yes or no, please. And he's like, now, 1994, yes or no, please. They're not going to say yes or no.
They're not.
Should we pay or shouldn't we? That's a simple question. So, but Jesus knew their hypocrisy. And his answer is, why are you trying to trap me? So he didn't answer the question. He answered the question with a question, which is in any political world, they say that's the greatest thing you can ever do. And Jesus.
But he also destroys the narrative of all that flattery. Yeah. It's just like he did. Well, you know, as you said, I'm a noble man who teaches only truth. He just says, why are you trying to trap?
It was all a trap because they were bragging on him. So they put him on the spot. Everybody's watching. This is a moment here. Now, I think there's some irony in here that I told last podcast when I was sitting in my house reading my Bible at 1 o'clock in the morning, I was like, oh my goodness, it hit me in this next statement. Cause he asked, bring me a denarii and let me look at it. They brought the coin and he asked them, whose portrait or image, I think is a better rendering, is this? And whose inscription? Caesar's, they replied. Then Jesus said to them, give to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. And they were amazed at him. Now, the reason they were amazed, I think we need to discuss. And I'm gonna bring out a couple of points that this word that he used when it said give, the King James Version says rendered. And because it's a different word than the one, you know, is it right to pay? What did they ask him?
Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not?
And so the rendering that he said, give to Caesar, means you give him what you deserve. It's not give as in a gift or because it's your duty or it's so. Think about that. Give to Caesar what he deserves. And so that's his answer. Now, So what is your initial thoughts? And then I'll give y'all my epiphany.
Well, I mean, my initial thought is they're trying to get him to, as you properly laid out, to choose one or the other, and he chooses both. I mean, here, Caesar's here, but
there's
God is here.
There's a lot of individuals then and now that they really hate to pay taxes.
Oh, and I'm one of them.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
I mean,
but I live here and I'm a citizen of this country.
Think about two ironies here. So the actual coin, I looked it up because y'all know I'm a treasure hunter and I'm into.
I actually coins. Thought when I was studying, I thought about you. I was like, "Well, this is Jace as well." Hang on, let's take a break.
So we talk a lot on our podcast, obviously, about biblical things, way to have purity in your life and in your heart, have better marriages, be better dads, be better moms. And one of the things that that is a big challenge for people, especially in our culture, is what they look at and what they see. And of course, the internet has made it possible for, unfortunately, people at younger and younger ages to be exposed to pornography, which is a real scourge. One of our sponsors here of the podcast is a group called Covenant Eyes. And for the past 22 years, they've helped over 1.5 million people towards a porn-free life. So we love what they're doing. They make you better in your family, of course, better in your own heart and mind. We know what God tells us in the Bible about lust, and it doesn't do anybody any good. So if you want to see what a porn-free life can look like and protect your family, go to CoveEyes.com/Phil. Covenant Eyes is going to give you a free 30-day trial. So it's free 30 days if you sign up today with the promo code Phil. Go to CoveEyes, CoveEyes.com/Phil, and get this pornography out of your life.
To my surprise, on the coin, you had this Tiberius Caesar, and it says, Son of Divine Augustus. Now, just think about that statement, Son of Divine. And on the other side, it said, Highest Priest. So here's a king who produced a coin. They were his coin. He took his material and made the coin.
Correct.
So in this instance, it's a little different than our government. Deal. This guy had all this wealth. He possessed all the coins and distributed it to the people and was like, you pay it back. But
commerce and business. And
what he portrayed on the coin was son of a god, highest priest, king. And so here is the son of God, who is God's and our high priest, king, introducing the kingdom, and that's where Jesus went, because his answer was, whose image is this? So he went to the image of the coin. Well, whose image is Jesus? He's the Son of God, he's the high priest, and he's king. That's what he was doing. So I think when he said render, give, you give him what he deserves. Yeah, he didn't say no, don't pay the tax, but he's basically saying out from under that, because he's not really supporting what he's doing, but he's like, well, he created this little cute picture with these claims that are not true, but you give to God what is God's. Well, we're created in the image of God. And so I think you see the irony in that, which is give him his little coin, but you give God your allegiance. I mean, you give him your life.
Yeah, he wants your heart.
Why I made a big deal about that word. I mean, I think the NIV did a terrible job
the word
translating
render?
That. Yeah, I think it should be render is a better translation. Now, look, you go study it yourself, and I could be wrong. But
no, I've read that too. It's giving back to Caesar what it's more of what is already his.
Yeah,
it's
which not, is yeah. what I said. He created the coin.
Well, that's obviously. And I think what he's getting at here, I think this point that he's getting at here is that because the big question I would have is, well, what's God's? Okay, fine, the coin is Caesar's, but what's God's? I think the answer is God wants the heart. He wants your heart. And that's why when we move further along into Mark 12, when they try to trap him again later on with the question, what's the greatest commandment? Jesus does give an answer then. mean, that one, he doesn't, it's not a quirky answer. It's not a zinger. It's not a play on words. It's not a gotcha moment, which it has been up until this point. All these things have been like just him intellectually scalding the leaders. I look at it as like, up until this point, it's like that scene in every high school movie where you have the new kid that moves into school and he's being picked on by the jock, and he just totally embarrasses him in front of the whole school. You know, it's like that moment where Jesus is embarrassing these people. He's exposing them. But then there is that moment where they say, what's the greatest commandment? And there's like a moment in the Bible in Jesus's ministry where it was just complete sincerity of, this is what I'm after. I'm after the heart.
And, there's no doubt.
And there's a ton of implications of what that means. I think it's one of those things that I've been a Christian for 22 years, and I still don't really know what that means fully. I mean, I'm just scratching the surface of that. But I think whatever that means to give God my heart, I think when you talked about misery, Phil, like what follows people who refuse to give their heart to God is misery.
That's right.
You know, so I know whatever it is to give my heart to God, I know that it smells a lot like peace of mind.
Well, that's why last podcast I brought up the Sermon on the Mount, because those heart-like qualities, poor in spirit and hungering and thirsting for righteousness and humbled and meek, and you're in a position to give God your heart because you realize I'm not going to be able to pull this off. And so here, I think the irony of this, because we talked about Jesus owned everything but had nothing. That's why people couldn't recognize him as a king. And we talked about all the things he borrowed. Remember the thing? He borrowed a colt. He borrowed the upper room. He borrowed a house. He borrowed boats so he could preach in. He borrowed food. You know, and some of them he gave back the way it was. Like he said, I'll return the colt. Some he took and did a miracle and had more food. And well, here he had to borrow a coin, which is, I think, ironic. And here, so you have two sides, two kings. You have one who owns all the coins in the world. Literally, he produced them. And then you have another king on the other side who had to borrow one to make a point. He didn't say, let me get this out of my pocket.
Yeah.
I think there's some irony in here that shows you some truth.
But look, and it does come forward to today, because the same trap is laid out. People do it today. They'll think, well, it's got to be either or. You know, no, it's both and. We live here. So whatever the government is, wherever you live on the planet, there's a government. Guess what? They're going to print money, and it's going to have their leaders on it. That's what ours do. They're going to waste a lot. And look, and on our money, it says, in God we trust. Still, they've been trying to get it off. It says it on there.
Yeah.
So both are mentioned on our money. Mm-hmm. E pluribus unum, you know, out of many
ones. But you don't give your allegiance to it. And I think that's what he said.
That's the point.
It's a place of extremes, and you see that. And I think he's somewhat addressing that, because you see the radical edges of this, or people just say, well, we're not supporting it, we're going to go move to a mountain, we ain't paying taxes, and we're going to seclude ourselves from the world. The problem with that is that flies in the face from every text about we're the light of the world, we're the salt of the earth, where God uses us in these situations. I mean, Jesus is going to the temple.
Think about how long. Well, I've been keeping up with the political battles since the late 90s when I was in college and got into talk radio. And here's what I can report after 20-something years of keeping up with it. People are still mad. I'm like, and at some point, I just had to come to the conclusion, I don't want to live my life in constant outrage.
That's it.
I mean, I'm going to give my headspace over that if I'm not. I mean, we're not, like, it's like,
and guess what? Governments are corrupt,
and look,
and they waste and money. Look,
yeah, big shocker. I mean,
and you look, and here comes the misery.
Yeah, here comes
exactly.
The horn. Well, the other extreme is to be a zealot in these days, which was. Get a weapon.
Yeah,
we're gonna overturn.
By the way, one of the 12, one of the Simons,
had zealot tendencies.
He was a zealot.
He was a zealot.
I mean, he was in that camp. But when he came over to Jesus, he's hearing a different message.
That's why Jesus's answer was so clever, which is basically give him his little coin. But he didn't support that. But that's why I made it such a big deal about, give to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God. And he made the point about the whose image of that. Ultimately, God owns everything.
Right.
Yeah.
And compared to your life and the air that you're breathing and your talents. Plus,
there's a lot of people running around, Jay. There's a lot of people that doesn't give their money to either.
Well, right.
That's a good point. Our heart. That's true.
Yeah.
But look, from our perspective, let's take a break.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
From our perspective, the government, the one that prints our money, they're powerful. And they could come in to the four of us. They could come in tomorrow, take all our money, put us in jail for whatever. Somebody makes up something. And it'd be hard for them in our system to take our lives. But even if they did that, they still don't get us. I mean, we're committed to something bigger.
I think that's the big thing, right? I mean, that's the opposite of misery, that now my well-being is not tied to my circumstance.
Exactly.
In the kingdom of God, my well-being is not tied to my circumstance or what I'm consuming. I think we've bought the lie that if we can consume possessions and victory and political power, if we can consume these things and somehow, that's not going to fulfill you.
Yeah.
And Jesus is upside down kingdom. That's what he's saying. Like, it's not actually you get fulfillment in my kingdom from giving. Well, that's something I can do.
Well, right. That's why two paragraphs later, you have because he does this story within a story within a story within a story. He then brings up this in 41, Jesus, and I think we should read it now. He sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. Now, look, if you go back and read two chapters, there's a pretty good chance that what's going on at the temple treasury might have some issues or some corruption, because he's overturning tables. So many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in two very small copper coins worth only a fraction of a penny. Now, he calls the disciples over to him and he said, look, I tell you the truth, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on. You say, what was his point? Was he trying to share why you should support the temple? Probably not.
He just turned over the tables and talked about what a mockery they'd made out of it. A den of robbers. So obviously, it ain't even about the money, right?
No.
It shows you that what his kingdom represents, and that's why I brought up the Luke 6, and I want to bring it up again, because I really think that's his point. When he says in Luke 6, in verse 20, when he said, blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of heaven. You read the Matthew 5, the poor in spirit, those qualities that he's after. You have your heart ready to receive Jesus in this state. Blessed are you who hunger now, for you'll be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep, for you will laugh. Blessed are you men who hate you when they. So you're putting your heart in a position to realize that Jesus offers the solution. His power is what's going to carry me through.
Yeah.
His success. So then he turned it around in 24. Woe to you who are rich, for you. That's why he made these comments about it's so hard for a rich man to inherit the kingdom of God. Because when you're comfortable, when you're successful and when you got a lot of money, you're under a delusion that somehow or another you're a powerful person on the planet and you're going to beat death and you're going to somehow justify the mistakes you've made.
Yeah.
And it's just not going to happen. I mean, you're not going to have a purpose in life that doesn't end on you transferring all your power and people arguing about what to do with your money. You are no longer here. And at the end of the day.
And it will happen. I, you know, every time someone close to me dies, you know, I lost two grandparents a few years to COVID. And my mom died before that. But it's when you're going through their house and you're going through their stuff and you're dividing it up at the end, it's a sobering thought, you know. A lot of it goes in the trash. And then the rest of it just gets kind of like divided up. My granddad, on everything that he owned, I don't know why he did this. He put his name and his phone number, I guess, in case he lost it. I mean, his coffee mugs had everything. He didn't want to lose it. And I'm sitting there at the end of his life, and I've got all this stuff with his name on it. I'm like, it's just,
it didn't matter, right?
It didn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you can understand the frustration that people have and the misery. That's why, because there's that thing right there is like nagging at all of us. I think and for those who refuse to move into Jesus's kingdom, like that's got to produce it's miserable. Because that is your fate. That is your end. That's where this thing is headed. And I think when Jesus is looking at this coin and he's like, all these things he's talking about here, he's just kind of like this, putting a spotlight on all that.
I think you're right, Jason, to read that text in with the context of the question they asked, because it really does come down to which heart do you want to have? Because right before that, he describes the teachers of the law, and it's not pretty.
Nope.
What they love. They love to be seen.
Well, I was trying to make a point that the reason this is controversial is because people go here to say whether you should pay taxes or not. But nobody ever goes to the widow's offering and saying,
should you give
everything? How come you're supporting all this mess in the temple here? They've obviously missed it.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus cannot be any more clear. And the problem is because we're talking about, you know, yo money. And the way the government operates, and
remember, me,
whatever political party you are, you're going to be able to find some problems with the government.
And remember, in the first century culture, the other than children, which are even lesser, but the widow woman is as low as you go. I mean, she's got nothing. She's got nobody to take care of her. And so that's the picture he's saying. That's who I'm with. You know, Sunday I preached a sermon, and you know, people are like, they appreciate this. You said that. I didn't understand that. And you get all these comments afterwards. But there was a little widow lady at our church that we all have known her whole life. And she got to where she kind of doesn't recognize people now. But as I was walking out, somebody was helping her to get outside to her car. And she looked. And of course, I just preached. And she looked up and she said, Alan, is that you? I said, yes, ma'am, it's me. And then she kissed me on both cheeks. Mm. And I thought, you know, out of anything good that happened today, that was the greatest blessing I got.
Yeah.
You know, because she's all in. You know, it's that heart. And I think that's what Jesus is talking about. That's what he looks for.
That's a good point that you bring up, too, with the kind of people that Jesus is holding up as the leaders in the kingdom. It doesn't make any sense. Even at his resurrection, you think, I mean women were, I think it was Josephus said that a testimony of a woman was like out of a dog or something. I can't remember the exact quote. And it was that's who Jesus chose to bear witness to his resurrection.
That's right.
So, I mean, there's like all kind of implications of the kingdom and how it would advance marginalized people. I mean, you think of like Jesus was, I mean, what he was doing was completely groundbreaking.
Oh, exactly.
And just transformational.
That's why I keep bringing up this point, and I hope we get it, that when you think of any government or any court system or what is the purpose of that? Why do we have that? It should be to have all people reach their potential and be their best.
And to have true justice.
True justice.
People are wrong.
All people. Here's the problem.
Woo.
That's not happening.
No.
Only in Jesus will you find the answer to racism, ultimate unity, to taking care of injustice, to helping the poor. Look, to health care.
You know, how much money did he ever blow?
I guess every
all
dime
these people,
he had.
I mean,
he had to borrow a quarter.
He's going around, and I don't know of any. The only time I saw money change hands was right here. And
Well, he had to borrow a quarter. That's one, what I said.
One piece.
Or when they, he's when like, he let me Peter make an illustration. Coin out of the fish.
All right, quick, give me a quarter.
Yeah, I need a coin to look at. Let's take our last break.
I just find it fascinating, and I think if you go down the political spectrum, when you look at what Jesus did on a daily basis, he actually was way more functional about helping all people in all circumstances, no matter what had happened, from race.
You know, it is kind of interesting. Give your money to Caesar, and who was it? It was Caesar or the other? Where did he say do it?
Give to Caesar what is Caesar's.
Yeah, give
to Caesar what is God.
But it's pretty funny that that's the only time that money ever came up. The whole time he was there.
Right.
I mean,
it's kind of like the deal about, people talk about giving a lot, give to churches, give to charities.
Yeah.
But really, I mean, his point here is that God doesn't really need your money.
No, he does.
But I mean,
there is the story about when Peter, they try to trap him about, paying a different kind of tax. Right. And he said, I tell you what.
That was a temple tax.
Yeah, go catch a fish. And because I think this is, I don't want to make light of it, but it's almost comical. I almost like chuckled when he said, give to Caesar what is Caesar. I mean, give him his little coin that he made, but you give to God what is God's. Well, yep. Wouldn't the answer to that to be everything?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, give him everything, but you can give him his little coin with his little face on.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yep.
I feel like this divine reference helps me because look, I hate paying taxes. Yeah. They're way too high.
Paul made a pretty strong argument with the Corinthians that they were a little bit stingy.
When I get my tax bill, I'm like, take your little coins and do whatever it is you're going to do with it, because I'm pretty sure it's not going to be very, very good, because I'm just looking at the track record. But I'm not going to go dig a hole and bury it and live alone the rest of my days because I'm so fed up with the tax system, even though
the reason you don't like it, and all of us don't, is because our country was founded on two basic principles. The first one was religious liberty. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people came here so they could worship God without the king overseeing them. And then not long after that, it was because we didn't like to pay taxes.
Yeah.
So we started
throwing stuff off the ship.
But I think that's why there's stories in here about the widow, because I'm like, you want to do something with my tax money? How about go help some widows and some orphans?
Yeah.
I'll be for that.
And I think you can get into that. We could get in discussions about tax reform, and I don't think that's bad. I think the big thing is when it becomes that is your allegiance.
Yeah.
Is to these political movements and causes. I mean, I've got political beliefs, and I have economic philosophy that I hold to, and I think I'm right.
And sometimes you get caught up in it, right?
I think it's if you put it in perspective.
And you ain't budging.
Look, if you give your allegiance to God, but you also pay your taxes, but you're realizing that this is way down the list of where your allegiance lies, and you do it, and I think you justify it by what he said. And you can find the positives, bridges and roads and different things that are happening that you can find a few positive things. I mean, you don't want to be walking around, because if you start reading in a lot of these bills that are passed on where the taxpayer money is going, I mean, look, there's whole shows and networks that run 24 cycles, and they just tell where the money's going, and it just enrages people. if you want to sit up to that table every day of your life, you're going to walk around grumpy and mad. That's why I'm like, just turn it off. Why are you doing this to yourself?
I think that needs to be said. Because, I mean, one day I'll tell my full testimony on this subject, because it's been an incredible journey, and I could write a book about this.
Are you waiting for controversial. The statute of limitations to run out?
Yeah, I got to think about all that. But I will tell you that at some point you have to ask yourself this question. Do you want to be angry all the time? And I think we have to have a different discussion as believers about, and I'm not saying I have the answer yet, but we do. I think we have to rethink how we're having a discussion about political things. I think what's been happening is it's put us in such a spot as believers. I just think that there should be more transformation and joy. Mm-hmm.
Yep. I mean, well, Jesus is the one that transformed. And and the underlying current here is that by his death, he is going to accomplish power and success, and his love and all these, you know, his glory and goodness is going to be passed on to us through the Holy Spirit. And that's where we camp out.
Yeah.
So it puts it in perspective in the world that we live in. So, but why are we here? Why doesn't he just come back? Why? Oh, you know, because people, they'll watch the news for an hour and come tell me the world's fixing to end. This is it.
Yeah.
I just watched it. I mean, everything, we don't know a male from a female, and we're giving taxes to, you know, whatever. People just get so upset, and they're like, the world's fixed to end. And I'm like,
this last election cycle, death of democracy. Democracy's on the ballot. It's all going to be over if we don't vote the right way.
I'm like, the world is going to end when God has looked down and we have done what he wants us to do, which is making Jesus look good to the world, bringing people together, no matter what their culture or what their behavior or whatever you can come up with that divides us. Because all these passages in the New Testament are going to come to light. There's neither male nor female or social class, or he brings people together at the foot of the cross. He gives us grace. He gives us love. He gives us hope. He brings us into a family. I mean, you just think every problem in the world he addresses.
That's right.
He gives a solution to and an answer, and it's permanent. It's not just, we're going to see that in the next, because they're going to come up with the afterlife. And it's like, you see how their mind's working. They're like, all right, we couldn't get him on politics, we couldn't get him on religion, let's try the afterlife. It's just one thing after another that they're trying to get.
Just throwing spaghetti against the wall.
Like, and you know what? I think here's, I don't know the answer to all the questions, but I do know here's one answer. That when Jesus answered all these questions, the one word that I would say describes what he said was transcendent. It was just above it. Yep. It was above it. It was whatever plane they were on, they were asking on down here, and he was answering up here. In another world that they were just like.
And it was camouflaged through the opposite. He redefined success as they know it, because we know what political powers do.
Yeah.
It's all about this life. It's all about your bank account, how many people follow you. And like, I mean, you got to remember, Jesus started this whole thing. If you put him in the social media world, I mean, look, he's got 12 followers.
Yeah. I did see that Jesus had a verified Twitter account now.
Go look up.
Blue check.
They got the blue check.
Go find me an important person on Facebook or Twitter or whatever who has 12 followers. Nobody would deem that as successful.
Yeah.
And that's why I think he turned this whole thing on its head, because he came at it from a spiritual angle.
Which is kind of funny you said that, because I was thinking about that conversation he had with his siblings when they said, you know, if you're going to be a public figure, you got to get out and mingle. You know, I'm paraphrasing.
No, but they tried to help
him. That's what I'm saying. His little PR firm there, they're like, you know, they didn't even believe in him, right?
Exactly.
Which is amazing. Yeah. All right, we're out of time. We're going to flesh a little more of this in overtime.
I did forget one thing. If you want to know about the movie, I'm going to say this on every episode.
Okay.
Tell us.
You got to go to theblindmovie.com.
The Blind Movie.
Jason's going to go and put your email in so I can keep you updated on everything.
Emma?
So, yeah.
I'll get some people on it.
Get some people on it.
So. Jason, I'll have my people call your people and we'll do lunch. All right. So theblindmovie.com. If you want to follow us over to overtime for a little more discussion on Mark 12, that's blazetv.com/unashamed. They got a promo, $10 off if you use the promo code Phil. So check it out.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube. And be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.